Welcome to the Mosh Pit, your home for unsigned punk, rock, and metal artists, where your music goes to be heard.
Waves of Distortion, Race of Time.
Welcome to the Mosh Pit. Your host, Wes Everett, with my guest, Mr. Gene from Faithless Town Band. Gene, how you been, buddy?
I've been doing well, Wes. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us a little bit about Faithless Town. What have you guys been up to?
Certainly. We started way back in 2008 in Atlanta. And we put out an EP that was very kind of alt-country Americana sounding. You know, it was acoustic guitar, pedal steel, fiddle. And then a couple years after that, we put out another EP. It was much more kind of eclectic and more rock-based in its sounds. And since then, we've gone on to put out two full-length albums, American Refugee in 2012, which was an 8-song LP that we funded through a successful Kickstarter campaign, and had the song Ghost of My Hometown on, which got some radio play down here in the Southeast. And then last year, we actually put out a follow-up to that album called Empires that was released on Spectra Records. But we kind of had the misfortune of timing, because our album came out about 3 weeks before all the COVID insanity started. So it wasn't most the best or most opportune time to drop an album. But yeah, that's what we've been up to. And then last year, we while everything was kind of shut down, we put out a new song called What I'm Dreaming Of, which is a single. And all that can be found on the streaming platforms and through our website, faithlesstown.com.
Very cool, man. So how did the you said you put it out on Patreon or GoFundMe or?
So the first LP we did, we raised money for it through Kickstarter. And
I was just going to ask what your experience was with Kickstarter. Was there a lot of positives with it or?
Yeah, you know, the thing with Kickstarter that I think separates it from some of the other crowdfunding websites like Indiegogo is that, you know, with Kickstarter, if you don't reach your goal, you don't get any of the money. And so all the money goes back to the people that donated. But so that kind of gives you an incentive to like push really hard to make sure that you make your goal. But it also puts a lot of pressure on you, because it's like, you know, you set your goal at like $5,000 and you're coming up, you know, $4,900. You better, you know, see if your bass player's mom could donate some money to the campaign, or it's not going to happen. But yeah, overall, it was a positive experience. I'm not a huge fan of you know, the way the industry has become, where it seems like artists have to go directly to their fan base and kind of ask for support. You know, as much as like the label structure in the past had its had its downsides, and obviously labels were exploiting artists and not giving them their fair share in a lot of cases, it was still nice that, you know, you had this multi-million dollar company funding your recording, giving you some sort of tour support. And now we find ourselves in an industry where artists kind of have to do everything for themselves, including market their album and like connect with their audience.
Yeah, it's kind of sad there's not like a happy medium in between those. But yeah, you know, like you said, you got the record labels exploiting everybody, taking, you know, way too much percentage.
Just yeah, and I think, you know, and then like Napster and all that happened, and which is, you know, way back when, in, you know, the kind of the dawn of the internet. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think people, because they were aware of the way the labels kind of exploited artists, a lot of consumers thought it was okay to just steal music, thinking, oh, well, we're only hurting the labels. And then as you recall, the people like Metallica that were pioneering that, the pushback, and they caught a lot of flack for it. Like, oh, what is Metallica? Like, why do they care if some kid, you know, some 13-year-old in Ohio is stealing, ripping their albums? Like, don't they have enough money? But you know, in hindsight, it's like, no, they were fighting because in the end, piracy and streaming was going to gut the whole industry. And it was, you know, and we've seen that happen. And so now we're just kind of like, all of us still doing it are trying to figure out, well, how do you still make a buck and stay viable and, you know, navigate the new digital age of streaming only? Because sadly, a lot of people don't buy physical albums. And that's where a lot of money was generated for artists. You know, along with touring, but now it's like just streaming.
Yeah, and 99 cents a song is not going to pay the bills, especially when you get what, a half of a cent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Spotify is how most people consume their music, I would say, and artists are getting fractions of a cent. So, you know, I live in Athens, Georgia now, and that's where the band is based currently. And, you know, I know bands here that they've had singles that have gotten 10 million streams, and you think, wow, y'all made it. right? 10 million people listen to your song, and these cats are still bartending, you know, like they didn't really notice much of a difference in their lives because, you know, if you have 5-6 people in a band and you break down whatever that streaming revenue was and you split it up, it's, I mean, maybe you could take your wife out to a nice dinner, but you don't got much left over. It's not the good old days where, you know, if you had 10 million people listening to your song on the radio, that meant something.
Shadow Puppets, Certain Kind of Girl.
Yeah, it's completely changed, and it's kind of sad in some ways. Like, I'm a physical media guy. I love my CDs. I still have a collection.
Me too, man. I'm looking at my collection right now. I'm in my little, like, home studio, and I've got my whole CD collection here, probably close, pushing 1,000 CDs, and I have it all alphabetized by artist name and then chronologically organized by release date.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm with you, man. I like physical media. And, you know, if the grid ever went down, if the internet ever went down, how would people listen to music? You know, people that got rid of their record collection, got rid of their CD collection. Say you lose the internet. What are you going to do? How are you going to listen to music?
Exactly. You're not.
Yeah, I mean,
at least, CDs.
Exactly. At least with us, even if we lost power, like if you got a generator, you know, you might have a solar power generator, you might have a gas generator, you could still listen to CDs, and vinyl. But if you don't have electricity, you don't have the internet, you're not listening to your collection. In fact, it might just be gone permanently if, you know, Spotify or Apple Music goes down.
Mm-hmm. See, that was one of the pushbacks that I always had with the video game side. You know, same sort of thing. Everything's going to just download the game. What if my PlayStation breaks? You know, what if I lose my account?
Right.
Because you know they're going to try to charge you again for, you got to get that dollar.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of physical media all across the board. Like, buy a book, have a library, have books. You can pass it on. You can loan them to people. You can pass it down to future generations. Same thing with a record collection. When everything's on a Kindle or in the cloud, like, what are you going to do with that?
Right. That's like, trading baseball cards. I remember a couple of people when I was in high school, they were like, look, I downloaded all of these baseball cards. I'm like, okay, you downloaded baseball cards. They're pictures. You going to print them out? What are you going to do with those?
Yeah, that's super weird. I've never heard of that because, that's like they're a collector's item because there's only so many of them produced, right?
Right.
So it's like I downloaded Babe Ruth's rookie card. It's like, it doesn't have the same value, man.
Yeah, I don't think it works that way. But getting back to you guys, has your money been made like with merch, or is that more where you're at instead of the CDs, or how is that with you?
Yeah, I would say t-shirts are a good way to, I feel like that's probably the bulk of the merch that you're going to sell as an artist out playing. I mean, if you have vinyl, I there's been that resurgence of vinyl culture, like an appreciation for records. But I mean, as an independent artist, making vinyl is super expensive. You know, like you can make CDs for less than $1 a unit. Whereas, and that's like the whole package and everything, where you're going to pay at least $6 to $8 per vinyl, or more. And you're not going to do like limited runs, you know, where if you're going to make like 50 to 100 CDs, you could do that. But you're going to have to do some quantity when you're pressing vinyl. So it's just really not that cost effective for artists. I think the merch is, you know, like t-shirts is how people will support bands when they play out. I mean, I'm still trying to sell CDs and people will buy them. But, there's a lot of people these days, like, you know, we kind of touched on that. They don't even have CD players anymore.
Right.
It's like a relic from the past. It's like you're showing them an 8-track or something or like a Betamax and, you know, a VHS. And you're like, what do I do with this?
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of the new cars are not even putting CDs in them anymore or CD players.
That's actually one of the few stipulations I have when looking to buy a new car is that it has to have a CD player. And I'm sure that's going to get harder and harder as time goes on. I'm probably just going to have to buy used cars or like, you know, retrofit it or put a outside of factory CD player into it.
Yeah. Go back to the old days of having to carry the portable CD player with the was that the car converter?
Yeah. I used to have one where, you put the tape in,
yep.
Right? And it would have the aux cable coming out, but you had to hit like play on the tape player, and then you would have that plugged into like a Walkman or, you know, a CD player, portable CD player.
Oh man, my high school days.
I mean, I remember tapes. Tapes were awesome. I still have some of my old tape cassettes, but I think like tapes were like the first, that was the first medium I remember listening to music on.
Mm-hmm.
I remember somebody gave me a copy of The Doors' first album, and it was on a 120 minute tape, you know, and that album's not that long. That album's like probably under 40 minutes. So it was like the whole album on one side, and then it would just start repeating, and then it would like, you know, play through the whole album again on the second side of the tape.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wore that tape out, and that was like the record that got me into music, because I had never heard anything that weird and just eerie and kind of it felt like otherworldly, and it made me feel, you know, it let me know what music was capable of. And since then, I like I understand the logistics of why that album is so weird. Like, did you know that that first Doors album sounds so weird and unlike everything else? Because when it went to the mastering process, like when they were going to, when it went to like the master press to press the vinyl, the master tape was like slightly pitched down, slightly slowed down. So everything on that album isn't really in a real key. It's like slightly pitched down, and that's why it just sounds a little bit more eerie, a little bit more goth in a way.
Oh, wow.
And it was just a mistake when it went to get pressed.
That's cool, but no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that is just like a weird accident, and then it kind of makes that album what it is. And they've since gone back and they did like, some 50-year anniversary reissue of it. And they pitch corrected it. Like they went back to the original tapes and they cleaned it up and then they mastered from that. And it just sounds weird. It doesn't sound right. You know, like you listen to it, it's like, why? Everything sounds brighter and there's like more of a kind of happy tone to it. And it's like, no, that's not the album I grew up with. The album I grew up with was like weird. And it's just that, you know, that little just, you know, semitone or less than that pitch down that makes that album so unique.
Deep dive, I'm alive, reason to exist. I sold my soul, what's the benefits? You feel towards me, don't mean anything. I watch them die, give me medicine.
Dancing with Ghosts, Dirty Oxygen.
Yeah, they used to do that a lot with, like, Last Dance with Mary Jane. is slightly like pitched up. I think a bunch of they used to do the Eagles Take It Easy is like sped up a little bit. It's like it just they would just like speed up the tape just a hair. Like it's hardly noticeable, but it's just enough that it just gives it it seems to give it a little bit more energy. And as a musician, you realize it when you try to play along with it because you're like, this isn't really in a real key. Like I'm in tune. I'm playing a G. They're playing a G. Why doesn't that sound right? And it's because the tape was just like, you know, pitched up just a hair, sped up just a hair.
Oh, wow. That's really cool, though. It's a cool trick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just gives it a little more energy. I've thought about doing that with some of our stuff as a goat, but then I'm like, if I ever like wanted to play along with it, I've written a bunch of songs now where, you know, I'll go for like months to maybe even a year without playing some of them. And then, you know, we play a long show and it's like, oh, I got to dig out all the old tunes and I have to go back and listen to stuff and relearn them. So if I had to do that, then I'd, you know, face that same problem trying to play along with Last Dance with Mary Jane, where I'm not in the right key.
Oh, no, would not be good. So, what's that?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, speaking of which, we, you know, the last album we put out, Empires, last year, and that's still available on everything. And we did a video for one of the tunes. We have two music videos for that. One's for California Come Home, and the other one is New World Order. And we put out that video last year. And, you know, also, yeah, we've got like a whole new album's worth of material. So we're trying to figure out how to make that a reality if we just do it ourselves or, you know, if the label's going to help with any of that. But, yeah, we're looking to put out some more music sometime soon.
Very cool. So with the CD coming out last year, you guys weren't able to tour for it because of the nonsense around the world.
Mm-hmm.
On this new album, are you looking to tour with it? Are you going to combine kind of the two?
Yeah, we'd like to. You know, right now, everybody's just kind of scrambling to figure out what's going on, and places are just slowly opening. I mean, here in Athens, it's been like one of the last places for music venues to start opening, which has been very disheartening. It's, you know, to see Los Angeles and New York and these places that had a lot more stricter regulations on them that have already opened sooner. Mm-hmm. But like, I think the 40 Watt and the Georgia Theater and some of these kind of historic Athens venues are finally starting to open up here in the next couple weeks. That being said, we got back to playing in April of this year, and we've played some breweries, and we've got another show coming up later this month. I'm not sure when this show will air, but on July 23rd, we're playing at Smith's Old Bar with our friends Sailing to Denver and the Stoplight Roses. That should be an awesome show. So yeah, as of right now, we're kind of still touring in support of that album, Empires, that came out last year, but we are also playing some of this new unreleased material as well. So if you come see us, we'll be doing kind of a mix of songs from Empire, songs from our first record, and then some new stuff that nobody's ever heard.
Very cool, man. I'll have to get out of that show. Maybe I can make it.
That would be fantastic, man. Yeah, that's on July 23rd at Smith's Old Bar. Tickets available now through their website or through our website. And then in August, we got a bunch of stuff going on. We're playing around Athens, Commerce. We're doing a music festival in Chattanooga called Get Off the Grid Fest, that I think is a 100% solar powered music festival. So that should be fun.
Yeah, that one sounds killer. Smith's Old Bar, killer venue, killer spot. What are some of your favorite venues to play around town?
In Georgia, I love the Earl. I think they just started having shows again. They're in East Atlanta Village, and we've played there many times, and we've had some of our album release shows there. It's just a great stage. They always have the best sound, live sound engineers. So definitely like the Earl a lot. There's a place called the Hummingbird down in Macon that's awesome.
Yeah, the Hummingbird is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great spot. We we played there one night, and it was like we played with our friend Matt McGrew from from Charleston, and it was, I guess there's some school down there in Macon, like some law school, and so it was just like packed full of college kids, and it was like bottomless Miller High Life night. It was like $5 all you could drink beer. So yeah, it was a pretty, it got wild. It was definitely a fun time.
That sounds like fun. Lost my train of thought on that one. So on this new album that you've got coming out, and on the last album, Empires, where'd you get your inspiration for the songs? Did you use anything from this past year, or...
Yeah, and so Empires, in a lot of ways, was kind of, I mean, some of those songs were pretty prophetic, I thought, especially New World Order and Empires, the title track. I think a lot of that kind of went, we got a bunch of press on it, relatively, like in the indie world, but very few reviewers, I think, picked up on some of the themes of that album. But, yeah, I mean... Empires is literally about how a powerful ruling class uses the media to keep people stupid and distracted while they take advantage of them. And New World Order is about the rise of a, one world totalitarian regime. So you can make the argument that a lot of that stuff seems to be coming to pass. So there's like those more globally looking albums or songs. And then there's just stuff that's more just kind of like personal, things like California Come Home and Shot in the Dark. I mean, Shot in the Dark, I wrote just really kind of inspired by my fiance and, you know, just being really happy and in love and feeling hopeful. And I don't write a lot of hopeful, optimistic songs, but that song is, you know, is coming from that place. So it's a very interesting album because some of it is very dark and looking at the world and kind of the crazy times that we're in. And then the other stuff is kind of is more introspective and looking at individual relationships and more personal, emotional matters. So, yeah, I'm really super proud of that album. It took a while to make, and it's just... I think it covers a lot of ground, you know, like one reviewer said it changes, like the tone and mood of the song, the album changes as like quickly as the genres of the songs, because there's everything from kind of like post-punk new wave sounding stuff, like Empires, the title track, to Shot in the Dark is like 80s saccharine pop. And then there's California Come Home, which is like a very more kind of Eagles 70s kind of vibe with like a bridge that sounds like something out of the Beach Boys. And then The Return, which is very grunge, very kind of Nirvana-esque. And it just covers a ton of ground. So I'm super proud of that album because I really like eclectic albums like that. You know, like that bands used to do that a lot. And especially like in the 60s and 70s, like the Beatles could do that. Led Zeppelin could do that. The Stones could do that to some degree. And then, you know, it's something I think as the PR companies and the marketing forces took over the industry and they said, well, you know, if you need to have one sound and this is like your sound. So if you're like whoever, you know, if you're Pearl Jam, everything has to sound like Pearl Jam. You got to have the guy bellowing and you got to have the kind of like, the rock riffs, and this is who you are. And they kind of like pigeonholed everybody. They had to be like, you just have to play this one type style of music. But back in the day, it wasn't like that. You know, you could be Led Zeppelin, you can do like Kashmir, and then you could, you know, you go into California and you could have these giant rock riffs, and then you could have like a beautiful folk song on the same record.
Sure.
Faithless Town, Empires.
Have you guys, have you checked out any, like, concept albums? Have you ever looked into any of those?
What's an example?
Rise Against Endgame was a concept album, and it was kind of like the end of the world, new beginnings. You could kind of see it build from song to song. It was just, I don't know, so few bands can actually pull one of those off.
Yeah, in some ways, like, Empires is kind of like a concept album of sorts. Mm-hmm. I always thought of it as kind of like the empires, the external empires, like the power structures of governments, mm-hmm. And like the hierarchy of society, and that being an empire, and then also just like the empire within ourself and our own, you know, feelings and emotions and how we rule over those and deal with that. But yeah, I always thought it'd be cool to do an album that, like, maybe not necessarily a concept album, but an album that, like, syncs up with a movie. You know how you're supposed, Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon syncs up with Wizard of Oz. Have you ever done that trick?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, it helps if you have a lot of weed or acid, then yeah. It definitely syncs up.
I think anything syncs at that point.
Yes. I heard you could do the same thing with Tool's Enema and Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I want to do that, but I want to make an album that pairs with just like a really obscure movie, like Joe versus the Volcano. And you know, you started on the third whatever growl of the lion, and it just syncs up and with Joe versus the Volcano. Maybe one day that I'll do something weird like that.
That would be so cool. That would be so cool. So, what do you guys feel is your biggest accomplishment as a band as of today?
Well, you know, we've been fortunate enough. We've shared the stage with some, you know, some acts and some people that we really admire. I think for us, though, for me personally, it's just songwriting. Like, I'm really proud of some of the songs that I've written. Ghost of My Hometown is one that I'm particularly fond of, and because it's I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and that song is about how, you know, you can move thousands of miles from where you were born, where you grew up, and the people you grew up around, and your family, but those people that kind of shaped you growing up, and those memories and the way those people affected you, that never leaves you. And so that song is about kind of that concept. And you know, my grandfather and my father worked in the steel mills in Pittsburgh back in the day. So it has references to that, and it has references to the neighborhoods in Pittsburgh that I used to frequent when I was like a teenager before I left town. And so I'm really proud of that. And it, just cause it's like really on a personal level, it's really, it just has a lot of meaning to me, but I think also it comes across and it can be like, people can get the universal message of it. And then, yeah, I'm just really fond of, really proud of the discography that we've put out. You know, we have Faithless Town, which is the first EP, then When We Were Lions, which was the second EP. Then we've got American Refugee, which is the first full length. And then we have Empires, which is the second full length album. So, and then we've put out some singles in addition to that. We did a single called City of Ghosts, and I directed and shot a music video for that. And that kind of went on to do the film festival circuit, because it, even though it's a music video, it's very narrative based. And so a lot of film festivals were receptive to it, and it ended up even signing a distribution deal with that that music video as a short film. So yeah, I'd say some of those things are what I'm proud of our accomplishments.
Definitely. Congratulations on that, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Do you have any advice for any up and coming artists trying to make a name for themselves in the business?
I say just be honest and do, just don't try to cater to anybody. I don't know if that's good financial and sound business advice, but I think for me, music is about art and it's about conveying something that's really, really personal and important. And, you know, if you feel the need to create and you have the ability to do that, that's what you're meant to do. And so just do that honestly as best you can. And, I think in writing songs, the song, you'll get a little snippet and then the song kind of just presents itself. It's almost like there's some other power or something working through you. And I've heard that's how it is for me. And I've heard that it's like that for, you know, writers and playwrights as well. So yeah, if you feel that you're here on earth to create, just create. And I think it'll find an audience what you're doing is earnest and honest. And don't try to, you know, cater to whatever the new fad is, because fads will come and go. Just make the music or art that you feel you need to, that means something to you. And people will either get it or they won't. And I don't think it's necessarily even about commercial success. You know, there's a lot of artists that, some of the greatest composers died penniless and in obscurity, but their music has lasted, for hundreds of years after their passing and still resonates with people and touches them. And I think that's what it's about. That's what I got.
Very good advice, man. Good advice. And anybody who's smart will take that. What are your three goals for the band for the 12 months ahead of us?
Well, I would love to play as many shows as we can, make up for lost time, because we didn't get to play for an entire year. So that's number one. I want to get out and connect with as many audiences and play as many shows as we can. So we're working on doing that currently. And like I said, our summer's looking pretty good so far. Got that show at Smithfield Bar in July, and then August is pretty packed for us. And then we just want to keep playing anywhere we can, especially here in the Southeast in America. Second goal is to start recording this new album's worth of material. I just put up one of our new songs that I wrote called Stacy. It's a very kind of folky number. I put that up on our Facebook and Instagram. People can find us. It's just at Faithless Town. So if you look us up on any of the social medias, you'll find us there and you can hear that tune. So I definitely want to record that new album. And the album, it's really kind of, I see it as like an A and B side, and the A side of the album is very full band, a lot of big rock songs and full band arrangements. And then the second side is more kind of acoustic numbers, and it's more kind of laid back and folky. So I want to bring that album to fruition. And yeah, man, that's it. And, you know, just keep sticking it to the man and fighting the power.
Yeah, love it. Well, man, I appreciate you sitting in with us on this episode of the Mosh Pit.
It's been my pleasure, Wes. Thanks for having me.
Hey, let everybody know where they can find you again. Plug your socials and, go from there.
Absolutely. Well, you can find us at faithlesstown.com. You can find us at Faithless Town on Twitter, at Faithless Town on Instagram, Faithless Town on Facebook. We're all over that stuff. We are on all the streaming platforms. Please check out our newest single, which is called What I'm Dreaming Of, and that's streaming everywhere. And come see us at Smith's Old Bar on July 23rd in Atlanta, Georgia.
Awesome. Hopefully we will be there. Quick question. Behind the name of the band, is there a story behind Faithless Town?
The story behind the band name is that we were called the Easy Hearts originally. That was what we were playing out as. And then we found out that there was a band, I think, in Denmark called the Easy Hearts already. And so we just started recording our first EP, and we had a song called Faithless Town. And it was just one of those things where it was just like, we needed a band name because the album, we were about to finish the EP. And I was just like, how about Faithless Town? And it became one of those things where, you know, it was the song title, the band name, and then that EP was, you know, self-titled. So it was almost like a Bad Company thing where it was just Faithless Town became the name of the band and was the song and the album.
Well, man, I appreciate it. And anytime you want to come on, hang out with us, give me a chat. We'll do this again.
Sounds great, Wes. Thanks so much, man, for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You have a good rest of your day.
All right. You too.
Later, bud.
Line, I'll be here. Take this.
Radio King, goodbye.